All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. A very sad Jason Whitlock here today.
I'll take that.
That's
take
Marcellus
that.
Wiley, that dude.
I'm very happy, that dude.
Coming up, we'll tell you if the real reasons are the Lakers are whining about the officiating.
And if Andrew Luck or Dak Prescott has more to prove on Sunday. But we start every day with a Whitlock. So what's your sad butt got today, big dog?
Y'all have to lift me up today, honestly. Seriously, because I did not sleep last night at all. I just kept replaying this game. It's going to take someone smarter than me to decode last night's Chargers-Chiefs football game. I don't know what to make of the Chargers. 29-28, come from behind, two-point conversion victory.
Yeah.
Was Phillip Rivers amazing over the final 8 minutes, leading the Chargers back from a 14-point deficit? What happened to Kansas City's offense in the second half? Did the Chargers take away KC's screen game, or did Andy Reid abandon it? Did the Chargers prove last night they're a legit Super Bowl threat, or did they expose the Chiefs as Super Bowl pretenders who can't play defense? For 25 years, I've been going to football and basketball games and decoding them, telling people exactly what to think after a contest.
Dude.
This is the first time in my know-it-all life that I don't know what to think after watching a game. What the hell happened last night? Seriously. All I have are vague suspicions and theories. Why? Because the game was so totally controlled by the decision-making of the referees that it's impossible for me to label Rivers as the hero or Kansas City's defense as the GOAT. On three of Los Angeles' four touchdowns, the Chargers' drive was extended thanks to highly questionable penalties on Kansas City's secondary. The pass interference to set up the Chargers at the one-yard line at the end of the game was mind-blowing. The receiver jumped and threw up one hand to stab at a high pass that was going to take him out of bounds. The Chiefs defender brushed the receiver's other arm. The bad calls went both ways. The 13-play touchdown drive that put KC ahead 28-14 included five penalties. My point is, the referees were the stars of Thursday night football, not Phillip Rivers, not Patrick Mahomes, not Andy Reid or Anthony Lynn. Was Lynn's decision to go for 2 points and the win bold? Yeah, I guess. But it was hard for me to focus on his decision because I was still trying to figure out why the Los Angeles receiver was allowed to push off with both hands and grab the TD grab. I just watched a game where every ticky-tack contact in the secondary was flagged, but no ref cared when a guy clearly shoved to get open in the front corner of the end zone. Longtime NFL sports writer Peter King has one of the most measured voices in sports media. Last night, King unleashed a string of tweets mirroring my thoughts. Please stop the ticky-tack flags ruining the game. My team lost last night. I'm a Chiefs fan, but I'm a much bigger NFL fan. I love the league. I love the players the most, the coaches second, and the executives third. I don't care about the freaking referees. I don't want to talk about them. I don't want them standing between me and my enjoyment of Rivers, Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Keenan Allen, Travis Kelce, Andy Reid, and Anthony Lynn. Game was a mystery to me last night. Joining the desk now are Fox NFL analyst Eric Dickerson and Seth Joyner. I'm a spoiled crying baby. Yes, I am. They ruined that damn game for me last night.
Join the death.
Marcellus.
Instead of death.
Salt.
What did I say? What did I say? Join the death. Yeah, I'm very sorry. Marcellus, help me out here, bro. Yeah. What the hell happened last night?
That was one that caught me off guard as well. You know, I tried to soften my landing yesterday by saying that the Chargers would lose. You know,
put
it out there, lay the mattress down, because I thought that they were going to lose on a shortened week being a road team and undermanned. No Keenan Allen, no Melvin Gordon. I just was like, this is an L waiting to happen. But we all know one narrative is true in sports. That if a road team gets to hang around, they start to build that confidence. Like, especially when you're playing a front runner team like the Kansas City Chiefs in terms of how they score points, but they also give up points. It's nothing worse than being in sixth gear running comfortably and look back, and only a couple paces behind is the person you thought was going to be way behind you. I would say to you, Whitlock, understated is undervalued in this league. Coming in with a balanced approach like the Chargers have, only two teams in our league are top 10 in both offense and defense. the Pittsburgh Steelers, which you like to take shots at, and my LA Chargers. That's it. Everybody else is coming in with this lopsided balanced attack, which is Kansas City Chiefs, 30th in defense and first in offense. And this understated approach coming from the toughness of his quarterback and the toughness of his coach, who was nearly killed in a car accident, if people don't know that, near-death experience that really gives this team a different grit than other teams. Remember, this is a team that was 0-4 last year. Since that point, have won 18 of their last 22 games. Best winning record in the NFL. And even in those four losses, three of them were by 3 points or fewer. This is a team that is not getting the proper credit and respect, and that's okay. Flying under the radars has served them well, and I think they're going to continue to put out performances like this with a balanced approach.
Well, welcome to my world, my friend. I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to stay on topic today. The Chargers are the type of team that once you get them down, you got to continue to pile on, and you got to – and that's normally Kansas City's deal. They normally just keep piling on the points. And I don't know whether it's an indictment on the Kansas City Chiefs for taking their foot off the pedal or whether it's, you know, you give the thumbs up to the Chargers and what they did on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, this team only had eight possessions. Kansas City only had eight possessions in the total game last night. And I'm telling you, this is the formula for how you beat these high-powered offenses. You got to minimize their possessions. You look at Kansas City, look at the Chargers, rather, 30 first downs. They won time of possession by 7 minutes, you know. And it goes back to what we talked about yesterday. You said you didn't trust Andy Reid. I said that, you know, he doesn't get a bad rep because this is what happens more times than not to an Andy Reid coach team.
Yeah.
In big games, they just don't close the deal. They start off like a house of fire, and then all of a sudden, they burn out and flame out.
Tennessee playoffs last year, 21-3 lead, lost that.
Yeah. I just hate I wasn't here yesterday. I got a chance to talk about what team I was being. Because I was out, and I told people, I said, the Chargers going to win this football game. The Chargers, I came, you a sellout. You played for the Chargers, sellout here.
I wanted them to win the most important one in the playoffs. I don't need this one on Thursday
You need
night.
This one, too, because they can win the division. Let me tell you something. The Chargers are a very good football team. I've been saying this all year. And, you know what? Anthony Lynn's name has not been coming up for Coach of the Year. Man, when you don't have your starters, they have had a lot of players out. Melvin Gordon's out. They had Joey Bosa, they just got back. Yeah. They have a very good defense. I think the two teams are playing the best defense, probably the Dallas Cowboys and the San Diego Chargers. They go to Pittsburgh, in Pittsburgh, get them a 16-point jump, come back and beat Pittsburgh. They go to Kansas City, in Kansas City, a team that everybody's saying, Super Bowl, and beat Kansas City. And this team is not the same team, talking about the Kansas City Chiefs, without Kareem Hunt. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, that is a gigantic loss. You might not see it. You're like, they can put Spencer Ware. Not the same football team. The Chargers are to me, they're the best team in the AFC. I think they're the team to beat because they're that hot. You know how it is playing football. You peak at the right time, and they're peaking right now.
They lost to the Rams. They lost to the Chiefs in week one. With a lot of young players getting their first opportunities, Derwin James. And then they gave one away to the Denver Broncos. Mm-hmm. But just think about it. On your resume, you only lost to the two teams that everyone's saying are the Super Bowl contenders. The best.
You 10 and 11. They won the last 10 games.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to Seth's point in some places where I'm trying to temper my emotions. But I legitimately did not sleep last night because this game just haunted me. And I'm frustrated with the referees for sure. But Andy Reid and this Chiefs defense – And I know Andy Reid's the offensive coach, but I think that's part of the problem because I'm looking at a garbage defense and a garbage strategy on defense. Everybody's celebrating the Phillip Rivers throw to Benjamin on fourth down. Oh, my God, it's one of the great throws and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, it's not. This was very simple because the Chiefs' defensive system is so simple. We're going to play man on the outside and our safety's going to break wide. Phillip Rivers, five-step drop, he's throwing to a spot because the defense is so obvious, it's so predictable. This isn't his second read. This is what the guy knows from the entire game and from their pregame preparation. Kansas City only plays man coverage, and they play two deep safeties, and they split wide at snap. I'm just going to throw to this spot, and this guy's going to be there. This is just a practice. The defense, and that, the reason I blame Andy Reid is because anytime you watch Andy Reid, no one talks about this. He's always sitting on the bench next to the quarterback when the defense is out on the field. And I'm like, he's not even involved in that side of the ball, and it drives me crazy.
You know what? I disagree with you.
Yeah.
That is a heck of
Thank
a throw.
Thank you. Yeah, look at it. That is a hell of a throw.
You
it's
have
like
to
this.
Understand.
Level.
You have to understand what the defense is trying to accomplish here. You got
– He does. He knows exactly what they're
I understand,
trying to
but, you, but you got two men, and that guy that's covering that slot receiver, he knows that he's got help over the top and outside, okay? And the only place that Phillip Rivers can throw that ball is where he put it. Now, you just got to give credit where credit is due. That's just a great play.
That's
now,
a great
I agree with you. The defense is predictable. You know he's going to play two man. But what that guy got to do is he got to get inside and close that window and make that ball go over the top where his help is, man.
The defender's in perfect position. If Phillip Rivers,
not.
Yes, he is.
No,
if Phillip Rivers delivers the ball exactly where they predetermined place, there's nothing they can do.
I wish we could stop the film and I could show you. There's a direct window. When you got a guy, that's why I say I don't understand why these coaches play outside technique, even against single high safety. Because the direct throw to a guy that's crossing the field like this, that's the easiest throw in the world. If this is the receiver, he's got to get inside. He closes that window. Now the ball has to go over the top and outside. But that direct throw, that was a great throw, man.
Yesterday, in preparation for this game, I was reading articles. Washington Post put one out. Pro Football Focus said that Phillip Rivers is the third best quarterback in tight window throws by quarterback rating. But first, if you talk about the yards per attempt in that same quarterback rating, that means down the field and you have blanket coverage. Good luck against Phillip Rivers. That's what this is. And look, he's a shot putter. So he's learned his own method of having accuracy and anticipation despite not having velocity. He has admitted Patrick Mahomes can make throws I can't even make. I can't even think of making. We saw him yesterday get sacked multiple times just because he's not mobile, looking for the defender because he knew he couldn't outrun the guy. Let me just take this sack. But Phillip Rivers, in these moments, because of his grit, his integrity, his clutchness, and that kind of accuracy, he's going
to get I will tell you what.
To me, it's a commitment to technique. Look at his footwork. It's perfect. Everything about it.
Yeah.
And so, again, he is accurate. And again, you can't feed this man a steady diet of man coverage because he is that accurate. You have to vary your coverages. Bob Sutton doesn't do it, and they got a damn head coach that completely ignores the defensive side of the football.
I will tell you this, and you see it, it is a mode of operation in the NFL. I have never seen so many teams in third and long situations that sit back and play zone or play man. They don't bring the pressure. If you bring pressure on third down and you give a quarterback, now you got to scheme it correctly because you can bring five and they got five to block it and they pick it up or six to block it. But if you scheme it correctly, you should come with a blitz every once in a while that gives that quarterback one read and one read only. If he makes the wrong decision, it's either
the problem, though, is he only had one read here because he knows what they're doing. He never looked at anybody else. He said, I'm going to take these five steps, and I'm going to release the ball, and I'm going to step through this throw, and I'm going to throw to a spot. Again,
Jason, he knew where his mismatch was. That's what that is. That's just playing great
quarterback.
You got
to know your mismatch.
He knew where the mismatch was. It didn't matter how many reads.
Okay, but here's what I'm saying. Not any quarterback in that situation. But I'm just saying, this is elementary. This is fundamental football. Given the coverage and given the way the Chiefs played the entire game, the Chiefs do the same damn thing on defense, play after play after play. And I'm going to tell you what, you can do that if you have all-stars all around you.
If you got pass rush.
Well, they got pass rush. They got Chris Jones.
Yeah, Jones
but again, they don't have all-stars at linebacker on the back end of their defense. You can't sit these guys in their secondary in the same coverage, play after play after play.
I will say
they're not talented enough for that. Help them out with scheme.
Defenses are too passive in today's game. they're so afraid of giving up the big play that guess what they do?
They give up the big play.
Well, let's not lose sight that no matter who's on your defense and what coverage you call, there's no defending the perfect pass. You can throw someone open or the perfect pass like we saw right there. Don't put that on Bob Sutton. He's like, bro, he is as close as he can be without getting that flag and still Phillip Rivers found that window.
You have to give the Chargers the credit they do. This is a very, very good football team. You know, Phillip Rivers sometimes, he'll throw the interception like, wow, not now. Don't throw it right now. Realistically,
before halftime.
If this game, if he didn't turn the ball over not one time, they would have beat the Chiefs by 14 points easily. This would have been a cakewalk for them. But they turned the ball over right there, going in for a half to touch. I'm like, you got to at least 10 points.
At least get the three.
Yeah, get the three and get out of there. Yeah.
I just think a quarterback as accomplished and experienced as Phillip Rivers, the Chiefs just look foolish feeding this guy a steady diet of the same thing over and over and over again. The guy's too good for that. Make him think. He didn't even have to think. All he had to do was trust his mechanics and what he's been doing for the past 30 years. Easy throw. Mm. Send the holiday gift that families across America have loved for over 100 years. Omaha Steaks, the perfect gift for families that love premium quality steaks, hamburgers, pork chops, and much more. Right now, Omaha Steaks has a limited time offer for Speak for Yourself listeners when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter the code JINGLE into the search bar. You will get 74% off Omaha Steaks family gift package, originally $195, now only $49.99. Order now and you'll get four hand-cut, aged to tenderness top sirloin steaks, two savory premium pork chops, four chicken fried steaks, four Omaha Steak burgers, four snappy kielbasa sausages, all beef meatballs, four perfectly browned potatoes au gratin, four made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets, plus get four more burgers for free. Omaha Steaks is a fifth-generation, family-owned company with over 100 years of experience delivering perfectly aged beef hand-cut by master butchers in Omaha. Again, get this limited-time package for only $49.99 when you go to omahasteaks.com, type JINGLE in the search bar, and add the family package to your cart. That's J-I-N-G-L-E, JINGLE. Don't wait, this offer ends soon. Go to omahasteaks.com, type JINGLE in the search bar to send Omaha Steaks family gift package today. Time for a big story, Whitlock and Wiley. Eric Dickerson and Seth Joyner are here. Return to Kansas City, where Phillip Rivers engineered an epic comeback. Who wrote this epic comeback?
Epic.
Where the officials helped the San Diego, the Los Angeles Chargers come back. Bringing the Chargers back from 14 down in the fourth quarter. They stunned the Chiefs going into the game. It looked like Patrick Mahomes had all but wrapped up the MVP, but Mahomes didn't put the game away when he had the chance, while Rivers saved his best for crunch time, which appears to be something of a trend since the Chargers' four-game win streak started in Week 12. Rivers has quietly been outplaying Mahomes, and I guess I got to be honest with you, the MVP race is back open again. I still put Patrick Mahomes in the lead. He has a chance to break Tom Brady's single-season TD record, but these last 2 to 3 games will determine the MVP. It's not over.
Understated is undervalued, just like we said in the last block, but you sound like you got a Heisman vote because you the dude that invited Dwayne Haskins. Huh? Let's just go and bring Dwayne on out here and take this L in front of everybody. You invite Phillip Rivers to this MVP conversation, you just telling him to take an L. He is not winning this. This is Patrick Mahomes. This is not Drew Brees' trophy. This is because Drew Brees lost it himself a couple weeks ago in Dallas. And then follow that up with another subpar Drew Brees performance, Tampa Bay. Meanwhile, we're criticizing Patrick Mahomes, or at least opening up
the
conversation.
We're not criticizing.
Yeah. He's getting caught by Phillip Rivers, even though Patrick Mahomes, a 110 quarterback rating, 2 touchdowns, no interception, in a losing effort that could have easily been a winning effort.
He was off game last night, Marcellus. Look, I love Patrick Mahomes. He was off.
Look, if this is the worst Patrick Mahomes we can see versus the worst Drew Brees we saw, guess what? There's no conversation in terms of MVP, and I don't think that Phillip Rivers leaps over Drew Brees and certainly doesn't catch a Patrick Mahomes in this conversation. He's too far back. And you use week 12 on. It was 11 weeks before that this conversation wasn't including Phillip Rivers.
Y'all want me to go next?
Yeah, please.
Well, first of all, I'm going totally opposite. I'm so sick of hearing about the quarterbacks. It's always quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. Other people play on this NFL also.
Name them.
To me, this guy, he reminds me a lot of a guy you play with, Reggie White.
We on the same page.
Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald is the most dominant defensive player, bar none. Mm. When you have to triple team a guy inside, think about that. Triple team him. That is sure dominance. You know, you're going back, well, should Drew Brees win it? Well, should Mahomes win it? Well, we should give it to Drew Brees possibly because, you know, he hadn't won it before. And I don't like that because it brings back my memory going back to college when they didn't the national championship. Well, Joe Paterno has never won a national championship. It's unfair to college football. He should win one. We were the best team. We were the undefeated team. We didn't win one because Joe Paterno was undefeated. No, he hadn't won one. He had a loss. Mm. So when I think about MVPs, I mean, they have a defensive player hasn't won it since 1986. That was Lawrence Taylor. Right. I was even in the race then. I wasn't even in it, really, but I was in it.
Yeah, you was. You came in second.
I came in second, but I really wasn't in second. I was so far behind. So, but really, when I think of, I mean, Aaron Donald's name most definitely should be right there with Mahomes, Breeze. He's that type of player.
I'm going to tell you why I agree with you. Breeze was on a tear. Mm. That loss in the subsequent week, he didn't play all that well. Mahomes has been on a tear. Now we're starting to see a little bit of chink in the armor. Todd Gurley was on a tear. He went to Chicago, got shut down. The only guy on this list, that has been consistent all year long, he's been a force on that defensive line, Aaron Donald. And you know what? We need to break the precedent, like you said, and start to look at some of these defensive players. I mean, look at the numbers this guy's putting up. 16 sacks. That's unconscionable for a guy that plays on the inside. Okay? Quarterback hits, 33. I mean, those are numbers the defensive ends put up. Total pressures, 58. I mean, and he's ranked number one. I mean, you see the graphic there. He's ranked number one in all of these areas. And if he continues to play well and he maintains his level of play over these next two, three games, there's no reason in the world why we shouldn't shift the focus away from quarterbacks and running backs. Because, you know, to be honest with you, the running back's probably going to get offensive player of the year. The quarterback's always going to get MVP. But this guy right here, what he's done this year, he deserves – real consideration. He deserves
MVP.
Thought I was crazy. I mean, Lord.
You thought I was crazy.
Hey, while we at it, Chris Jones. Hey, man, he got 14 sacks. He gets double teamed on a horrible defense, so they really focus in on him.
The key is a horrible defense.
But guess what? That makes it harder on the individual that's not horrible. Think about that. Aaron Donald, you got Sue there. He gets his share of some double teams. You got Aaron Donald who's benefiting. Is it coincidence or correlation? He's having his best year with his best defensive tackle next to him. I think it's correlation. But then Chris Jones, 14 sacks. Since week four, has had a sack plus in every single game. Aaron Donald can't even say that.
Nobody on that Kansas City defense is going to be in the MVP. There's no reason to go off into la-la land.
Okay.
And so literally, to me, I'm just sorry. This as a media person and as someone that tries to observe how these things play out, Drew Brees is in the running.
You think
if
so?
He finishes strong, yeah, because the narrative is so strong, he deserves one.
There we go.
Again.
There we go. I'm waiting for that.
The narrative is so strong, he deserves one. He's been in the league. I think Drew Brees and even a Phillip Rivers. I think the Chiefs, are the Chiefs' next game against Seattle?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Chiefs lose again and somehow don't win their division? Trust me, someone else can sneak in here and get into the MVP race, one of these other quarterbacks, and maybe even, again, y'all are not that crazy. If Aaron Donald finishes with a blizzard and the Rams finish with the best record in the league, I do think this collapse last night, and it's not Mahomes' fault.
Yeah,
I blame the defense. I blame Andy Reid, but not his fault. But just the fact that they may not finish with the best record, and he's thrown some interceptions, didn't last night, but has thrown some. The MVP race is back open. The door is cracked for someone to get in here and steal it.
If Aaron Donald gets to 20 sacks and they run the table and they went out, man, it'd be almost impossible. And Marcellus, I get your point that you got that guy next to him. But when they double team him and he destroys double team, when they scheme, okay, and good defensive coaches, good defensive line coaches and the coordinators, they do this. If you're gonna put that guy on a three, how do you ensure that he gets single block?
Mm-hmm.
Move that other tackle down in a zero or a one,
yep.
And that center got no other choice but to turn back.
Yeah,
okay, so you know, listen, that's just smart football. No matter who he's playing with, that's just smart football. Create those one-on-ones so that he can destroy guys, because you know there's not a single guard in the league that can block him.
J.J. Watt got 20 sacks twice and did MVP.
Let's move to a huge matchup this weekend between the Cowboys and the Colts, who are both jockeying for a playoff position. After a slow start, Dak Prescott has now led the Cowboys to 5 straight victories and is playing much better since Amari Cooper came to town. But there's also been a huge comeback going on in Indy, with Andrew Luck returning to form after more than a full season on the sidelines. Andrew Luck's a better player than Dak Prescott.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the expectations are so much higher for Andrew Luck. I actually think there's more to prove this week for Andrew Luck facing this great Cowboys defense than there is for Dak Prescott, who my expectations are just not that high for. I don't think Dak Prescott one way or the other is going to move the needle this weekend, but based on what goes on in this game, I think Andrew Luck can reannounce himself as a superstar quarterback in this league, as a guy that's on the same level as a Tom Brady and some of the other elite quarterbacks, Drew Brees. He's supposed to be on that level. You take out this Cowboys defense, and he's done that.
I think it's actually Dak Prescott at more to prove and fully motivated to go out there and have a great performance. Your argument loses me, because if Andrew Luck struggles against the Dallas defense, Dallas defense is great. If Andrew Luck goes out there and balls against Dallas defense, finally we figured this out. This Dallas defense is not as for real as we think. I think that's going to be the narrative post-game. We'll see how they play with that and move the goalposts on them. But Dak, Dak has so much to prove, one, to validate this contract that everyone says he shouldn't get in the first place. And we know the complexion game when it was a Tom Brady versus Peyton Manning. Even though they're never on the field at the same time, we just have that complexion game of perception. Oh, did you beat Drew Brees? Yes, Dak Prescott did. Oh, did you go beat the best prospect in the last 25 years since John Elway and Andrew Luck? Oh, if he does, then Jerry Jones is just sitting there adding commas to this contract. That's all he wants. So I think Dak has more on the line. And post-game, if he accomplishes that goal, they won't move the goalpost. They'll say Dak is official. He's out there beating the best prospects and best at the position.
I say Dak for the same reason. The first day that I was on the show this week, we talked about Jerry Jones. He's raised the expectation level. Okay, you go out and you make the trade for Amari Cooper. You give up a first-round draft pick because, according to Jerry, we're a wide receiver away from, you know, turning the corner. Listen, nobody expected for Andrew Luck to be back at this level this soon.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go back and you remember at the beginning of the year, it looked like he couldn't throw the ball 30 yards down the field, so everything was just dink and dunk.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, you know, he's kind of turned the corner. He got the strength in his arm back. He's got a great coach in Frank Wright, and they are just balling right now. But when you look at Zeke and Dak and Amari and the Cowboys, man, listen, the pressure's on them now to run the table. They're probably going to win, for all intents and purposes, going to win the NFC East. But now they got to continue to build momentum going into the playoffs, because if they go one and done, man, everybody going to say same old Cowboys.
You know that's coming.
Can I just go with both of them? Both. It's got to both of them. I mean, first of all, I mean, you Dak, you the Dallas Cowboys quarterback. That's pressure automatically. That's it. You have Zeke Elliott, one of the best running backs in the NFL. You know, they want now, people want to try to compare you to the young quarterbacks, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff. You know, are you one of those guys? Now you go look at Andrew Luck, who to me has when we first got in the league, he had a defensive head coach, defensive-minded head coach. You know, he played well, but still wasn't developing fast enough. Frank Wright is an offensive-minded guy. I think that's better for him. No offensive line at first. Suffering with offensive line. I know what that's like. I was in Indy with no offensive line. I still was like going to Vietnam with a BB gun. And that's what it was like. When you don't have guys up front, you can't be your best. You know, Andrew Luck, no matter how much talent you have, you know, if you don't have the guys to protect you, it's not going to work. So, in a sense, both of them kind of have different areas to prove. Because I think people look at Dak, he's a game manager. You know, he's just going to manage the game, and Dak is the guy. I mean, Zeke is the guy really going to run this football team and help the Cowboys win. So, I think it's kind of both.
I will say this, though. Andrew Luck, I think he gets a reprise on this year. Whether they make the playoffs.
A reprieve.
Whether they make the playoffs or not. Because no one expected for Frank Wright in the first year to have this team sitting where they are. The Dallas Cowboys, on the other hand, 2 years ago, they were 13-3. First round of the playoffs, they get bounced. They come back last year. All the problems with Zeke off the field. You know, they move on from Dez. They make the trade. You know, the defense is on the ascent. So the expectations, especially for Dak, because they expect, with the defense being where it is and all the moves that they've made to improve this football team, they expect for them to make noise in the playoffs. Nobody's expecting the Indianapolis Colts to be sitting where they are right now.
Hold on. Let's just remember, Marcellus said it. Andrew Luck came into the league as the next John Elway, the most can't-miss quarterback since John Elway. Yeah. And injuries and whatever, bad offensive lines or whatever, has Andrew Luck out of that conversation and at a different level than seen as the next superstar quarterback. Right now, Deshaun Watson and, hell, Carson Wentz before this latest injury, there was a bunch of Patrick Mahomes now. He's the next great heir apparent. All of that, if he takes out this Dallas defense, and I don't think anybody's going to back up and say, hey, the Dallas defense is overvalued. The Dallas defense has shown what it is. It's a great defense. That back end of the secondary covers very well. They got three of the best inside linebackers in football. If he does that, then now all of a sudden he's just catapulted himself back up into that elite quarterback conversation. If he doesn't, I'm still like,
For me, I look at it like you said it, Seth. The praise will be congruent for both if they win. Like, we will find ways to give love to Dak. We'll find ways to give love to Andrew Luck. But the criticism and defeat wouldn't be the same. Gotcha. Dak has run out of excuses, it seems like, in part because of Jerry's moves, in part because you got to run a game, in part because your defense is bald. Like, this is what Mark Sanchez became Mark Sanchez for, having a running game and a defense and then insert anybody, let alone Dak Prescott. So, Dak, that fall is much grander and greater it would be for Andrew Luck.
The expectations are much, much higher. You know, when you proclaim yourself to be America's team and you announce to the world that we're here, we're ready, we got all the pieces in place for the first time in 23 years, okay, and you fall in this game right here to this team that's trying to find their way back and their quarterback coming off of shoulder surgery, hey, listen, man, that falls a lot harder for them than it is for the Colts. The Colts going to bounce back next year.
All right, thanks, Eric. Thanks, Seth. There's something about auctions that makes shopping much more enjoyable. Sports fans, it probably has something to do with the competition and suspense that auctions provide. But who wants to spend time researching where their nearest auction house is and then make the trek all the way there? I definitely don't. And that's why I love Pristine Auction, an online sports auction house where you can buy and sell sports memorabilia from the comfort of your home. Pristine Auctions runs tons of different auction formats, including multiple weekly auctions, a premium monthly auction, as well as daily and 10-minute auctions. They guarantee the authenticity of their items, and everything you purchase comes with authentication from the most trusted sources. And the best part is, it's so affordable. I just saw an autographed Magic Johnson photo that sold for only $12. There's plenty more where that came from, too. Check out Pristine Auction now. You'll be hooked. It's free to register, free to bid, and only you pay for the items you win. That's Pristine Auction, spelled P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. And when you register, be sure to select the Speak for Yourself podcast from the drop-down menu in the How Did You Hear About Us section. This lets them know I sent you. Time to put on our thinking caps. We're joined by Fox NBA analyst Jim Jackson and Steven Jackson, Iceberg Jim Jackson, and about that action, Steven Jackson.
You gotta keep that.
As you all know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer, Marcellus, Columbia's very own Marcellus Wiley.
I hear you.
We're gonna take a deeper look at a big issue in sports. We got a special cap for Marcellus. Darnell,
bust a cap.
Bring the cap out for
nice.
The brains of this organization.
Whoa. Look at them arms.
That's short. A little short right there.
All right. Let's move to the NBA. Where Joakim Noah's tenure with the Knicks ended in training camp, but Noah recently got back into the league with the Grizzlies, and the former All-Star just made a surprisingly candid admission about what derailed his career in New York, saying, quote, "I could look back on it and say I thought I was ready for New York City, and I wasn't. It's something that I've got to live with. I remember after the first game, I probably had like 50 people in my house. I'm too lit. I'm too lit to play in New York City. Memphis is perfect for me." I think this speaks to a bigger issue, not just in the NBA, but we'll limit it to the NBA. Everybody's a lottery winner now. And not everybody's built to win the lottery. And, you know, there are superstars like a Michael Jordan, a LeBron James, a Kobe Bryant. These guys are self-motivated, and it doesn't matter how much money you pay them, they're going to continue to compete. But when everybody in your league is paid like they're a superstar, not everybody can handle it, and I think it undermines the game.
Unfair to make the direct correlation.
Ooh, you better speak the truth. I'm glad you said that.
Go ahead. Unfair.
Unfair
for the direct correlation that fully motivated individuals become superstars, because there are some guys with lower ceilings who are still fully motivated. But, hey, some guys have limitations, whatever that is, by game, by skill, whatever it may be. You can be an average player, but getting the most out of your average potential.
Yeah.
I'm going there, one. Two, it's inflation. Like, superstar money now is north of $35 million. So I can't get mad at a guy who's making, as you would say, lotto money, because the NBA is doing well as an economy and as a game. It's no longer the days of Magic Johnson, 25 years, $25 million. No longer the days of his teammate, Byron Scott, who played from 1984 to 2000 and made $11 million total. Meanwhile, on that same organization, Luol Deng made $18 million and didn't even play a single game. So, you know what? To me, don't hate the player, hate the game. But I'm not hating a game that is making it great for everybody, including those that sometimes don't qualify.
Yes, it's a different game now. I mean, you got the 15 guy on the bench making 10, 12 million. Mm. So it ain't the fact that everybody's winning the lottery. They winning the lottery without even playing it. That's basically what they doing. They don't even have to play the lottery. We just getting this free money. And that's what it is. But it sucks to me, because I'm one of those guys that played the game, and I wanted to earn my money, and I played the right way. And to see a lot of guys now that don't even care about the game, don't care about their teammates, don't even care about winning and still getting a lot of money, it takes away from the integrity of the game, especially from players. You know, like Byron Scott, who bust his butt the whole time he was in the league, and to see where the game is going now, it kind of sucks.
It's messed up, because I was with the Union early on in my career. When I came in 92, I got paid more than Michael Jordan, okay? Michael was making maybe $2.5 million. I was at $3 million. No, I wasn't better than Mike.
You was just as big as Mike Beck back then, though. You were big back then.
Here's the thing. What I'm saying is we
not
fought.
That big.
Yeah, he was big now.
Tell him,
he was big now. Come on now. He was big now. Everybody knew JJ.
I put some numbers in there. But we fought in the Union to make it where the players got equal share, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, the TV money came into effect. Mm-hmm. You have to pay 90% of the cap. In the free agent year, when there's not a lot of big free agents, dudes go get paid. They go get paid. Somebody go get the money.
Somebody.
Now, whether they can handle it, that still shouldn't deter whether people get paid, because that's part of the system.
Right.
That's what we fought for back in 95, 98, when we locked out, to be able to get this. Now, I played in Jersey. I understand the temptation. Now, it wasn't New York, but I'm going to tell you what, taking that Holland Tunnel, we right there in the city.
My rookie year was there, and it wasn't good. And,
but my, I was a little bit, and I was with Sam Cassell, and he wanted to hit the streets every day. But me, I was like, I'm out there, but I knew what I had to do. So I get your point, but for one person, that shouldn't take away from dudes getting paid. But can you handle it? It's some dudes that are better at handling it, some dudes that are, I don't care if they're making $2 million or they're making $50 million. Exactly. Some dudes just can't handle being in the big city.
Okay, yeah. Let me add this little twist in, because y'all, I agree. The players deserve the money, but how do you cut up the money among the players? And so this goes back to a conversation that LeBron or someone started a couple, two or three years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe we should be paying LeBron $90 million and Joakim Noah $3 million, rather than him getting $72 million over 4 years to go to New York. Again, some of the players just don't deserve and can't handle it. Again, Joakim Noah's being very honest, like, man, I was doing way too much. And so I'm for the players getting the money, but who should get it? Because a lot of these 20, 21, 22-year-old guys, you reining that kind of money on, and we shocked.
No, that's a good question, because what happens is, from a management perspective, I end up hamstringing myself by paying a guy, Otto Porter, a lot of money. Good player, okay, but you sign him for so much money, now you can't trade that contract. You end up being stuck with that, so you can't improve your team. So
he hasn't improved.
And that's what I'm saying. So
why should he? He's made a lifetime worth of money.
Right.
But he should want to.
But that's not fair.
But that's not a motivation. Look, I got paid one big contract, set a franchise record, all that. I was number one DN. I was like, yeah, I'm rich. Okay. And you know what? I got to shine sometime.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm not lying. I've never tried hard drugs, anything like that, but that money was an addiction. And you know what it did? It made me even more motivated. I was like, if I could change my life with this and they giving this away, I haven't met the player yet to say, oh, I'm fat, full, and I'm tapping out. That's good.
Oh, I can introduce you.
Oh, you know what? introduce me to someone who does that, and they don't have injuries also attached to what they were doing in terms of effort. Most guys, we could go through the names of the guys who, like, why they get Chandler Parsons, all that. Say what you want about Chandler. We know he parties, but we also know the dude is broke down, always injury prone. Like, it's tough to see the guy who taps out because they get paid. It's an addiction. You want to change the world.
Maybe they're getting injured, Marcellus, because they're not taking care of themselves.
Not taking it serious.
Yeah, you got to take care of yourself. You know, 8 hours of sleep is important. That's not a myth. And, you know, doing all the other things. You can't be hungover and working out.
Michael Jordan?
You
know. Everybody ain't Steven Jackson.
You know how many players you did. 14, right?
No injuries, no surgeries. Everybody ain't me.
You know how many players.
Hey, that's the realest statement. But you think about players. I hate to say somebody's worth something or not. When you go back to old school, and they'll tell you, we got paid on our numbers.
Right.
Eddie Johnson, those guys back in the day, if you didn't average X amount of points as a two guard, as a center, they put your numbers up and categorize it and say, you're not getting paid. Mm. I don't care what you think, what your agent says, when I compare you to the peers at your position and you're not in the top five, top 10, you're not getting paid.
Well, the NBA has a minimum salary cap. It goes unreported a lot of times, but you have to spend 90% of that cap.
You got to.
So guess what? If we don't go with Whitlock's formula, which is LeBron, you get 90 million, somebody gets three, then guess what? It's gravy for everybody, and that's what our forefathers wanted, no?
But this is what they can start doing. Whoever you're giving the money to, do a better job at picking those guys. Make sure this guy gonna earn his money. Make sure he gonna play. Make sure he gonna do his job, because it's a lot of situations where they just giving the guy money knowing that he's been on other teams that he didn't play well. He's been on other teams where he didn't show up, but they still paying guys like that, and that's where it becomes a problem. You paying guys that you know not gonna do their job.
I think the money makes it incredibly hard for anybody to do their job. Particularly a job as hard as being a professional athlete. You got 82 performances you got to put on. Mm-hmm. You're traveling. You're the target of women. You're the target of the media. You're the target.
What's hard about that?
I'm waiting for the hard part.
I'm listening. I'm like, none of that was hard for me.
But it goes back to what's your motivation? Because I tell kids and I tell people this all the time. I don't care what business you're in. If your motivation is to get paid, so as soon as you get paid, you're done. Mm-hmm. Because that's your motivation. But if you got something deep down inside of you that burns, that says, I want to be the best at what I do no matter what, then the money is just a byproduct of the work you put in.
And Herm Edwards told me this, too. And he told me this today in all sports, the kids now are more interested in what the game can do for them than loving the game. Mm. And that's true. They're more interested in what the money can do for them, the lifestyle, what they can get from the game. They don't actually love the game. And it's easy to see that.
Well, now. I'm going to defend the guy who just wants money because I wanted money. Yeah. And you know what?
I wanted money.
The more I wanted money. So guess what? It was only one way to get that money. It was to stay on that train called balling out.
Hey, you play well.
If you want women, you pay well. If you want nightlife, guess what? Ain't nothing better than walking to the club after you balled out in that game with that esteem and that chest poked out.
What?
So all these motivations to me can still mean the dude wants to go get it. We've known some greats who have partied them their way to the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And we know some guys that partied their way out the league.
Yep.
But to use partying as the problem, I don't see that.
Yeah, that's not the problem.
No. I'm not saying partying is the problem. I'm saying we're giving too many guys that can't handle it too much money. And I think that, because I'm not even demonizing the guys. If I was 21, 22, 23, 25, and something like $70 million, that's going to mess with your motivation.
Jason, isn't it all relative? Because back when I came in, the big contracts were what they were. They're not as big as now. So you got young kids coming out of school making $2, $3 million a year. That's relative to that time period. That's a lot of money. It was the same kind of things we had to deal with. Now, we didn't have to deal with the social media. Because if we had dealt with social media then, we might have been in trouble.
I've been bigger than life.
but you know what I'm saying? But it's a relative conversation on who can handle it and who not.
I get the relativity of it. But, Jim, I'm older than you, but we're close.
Not that much.
Yeah, we're close to the same.
Not that much, right. Bro.
So I want to be clear here.
Okay.
There was no time in my life where I ever equated, somebody got a $70 million contract and somebody got $2 or $3 million. That's not the same. $2 or $3 million, even in 1988. Generational wealth.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
You get somebody $70-some-odd million dollars and they do the right things with it, they can peace out.
But can you give total perspective? Because there are so many guys. All right, there's great, there's good, and then there's like the marginal guys and guys who are on the fringe of being out the league. There are so many great players who get paid second contracts and keep being great. So many players that are good and continue to be good. We're removing those success stories to have a narrow conversation on the few who got bad contracts and then turned into bad players. Most players that get the big dog money are still big dogs.
But here's the commonality, or what I'm saying is, I believe it's true. You may disagree. I look at the NBA product and I say, it's not as good. Mm. When these guys were making a little less money and things were more competitive, I think there's too many spoiled, pampered, too many young people with way too much money who see themselves as Justin Bieber or some rapper or whatever. They're not more than a basketball player. They're all trying to do moves off the court, all this other stuff. The game isn't as good or as competitive, in my opinion.
Well, I think that as far as talent-wise, the talent-wise is through the roof.
Oh, my God.
Talent is like we've never seen before, but as far as competing and caring about the game, it's definitely changed.
That's my point. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, joined again by Action Jim Jackson, about that action, Steven Jackson, and Iceberg Jim Jackson. All right, let's move to the NBA. Where James Harden and the Rockets blew out LeBron and the Lakers last night, with Harden dropping a 50-point triple-double en route to a 15-point win. Harden's big night was helped along by 19 free throw attempts, and he was getting so many calls that LeBron actually defended him with his hands behind his back at one point. Afterward, LeBron talked about the difficulty of guarding Harden.
Just trying to defend without fouling. So, that's a point of emphasis anytime you play Houston. I got guys that can sell calls really good, Chris and James. So, I try to keep your hands out of the cookie jar.
You just can't touch them. I'm just trying not to foul. They was calling it tight today, so I was just trying to keep my hands out. Very tough thing to play.
I don't like it. I watched this game last night while watching the football game. I don't like the whining afterwards. The Lakers have their own issues, including, their number one pick from last year, who, if you look since November 4th, he's back to being the bad guy. He shoots 23% from 3-point. 33% from the field. The last 18 games, Lonzo Ball's been a bigger problem than how you defend James Harden. Because, look, they blow the whistle the same at both ends. So I don't like the look of the wine in here.
Yeah, I thought it was bad leadership. It's hard to take shots at LeBron. I love LeBron's game. I love what he's done for the Lakers so far and trying to give them some energy and confidence beyond the regular season. Let's go get this. But that's bad leadership, and you could tell how the dominoes started to fall. Post-game, Lonzo's complaining. During the game, Luke Walton's getting a tech. Kuzma's getting a tech. And they're all just sitting there saying, hey, if our leader's going to go there and complain and not know what he's getting himself into, this is James Harden, second most free throw attempts in the game. You know what's coming. Every time you're around him, you breathe, foul, two shots. That's how it goes. So for LeBron to do that, I think it kind of takes some of the seriousness and some of the grit that this young team needs to learn from its leader.
Yeah, and one thing we got to say, LeBron can't do no more than what he's doing. He had a great game last night still, you know. But at the end of the day, you can't come out and make those excuses. And you can't, in the middle of the game, guard like that, being the so-called best player in the game. Now, one thing LeBron does, he does everything great. He makes his team great. But what he don't do, he don't give them toughness. He don't give them that attitude that we're going to go out there and do anything we have to do to win this game. He don't give that toughness to these guys. You can get that from Tyson Chandler every now and then, but they don't have a steady guy that brings that toughness and that go-getter attitude to that team. Mm-hmm. And when you're playing teams like that, you're going to need that being a young team.
The difference is, I'm a further that point. When I played with Kobe, well, I watched Kobe when I was on the bench. You know what I mean?
I watched
him. But
you practiced
I practiced with him, you know what I mean?
To be fair, I played against him on the court and I was still watching.
Exactly. So here's the grit you're talking about. We're playing the Nets and Vince Carter is playing. Kobe before the game was like, I'm shutting him down. I'm going at him from the beginning of the game. Not just offensively. I'm talking about defensively. So everybody else around it, once they saw him get up into Vince, it was just like, oh, no, I can't let my guy beat him. Now, LeBron, as great as he is, can't complain because he gets those same calls.
Yes.
So it's hard for you to complain about James Harden getting those calls when you get him as well.
Right.
So as a leader, you have to tell your guys, listen, man, this is how it's going to be tonight.
Yeah.
They're going to call everything close. Mm. So if he drives, guess what? Funnel the ball, make him give it up to somebody else. Somebody got to beat it because we can't stay in front of him right now.
Right.
Make somebody else beat it. And that's the leadership I think you're talking about, Jack.
Yeah, and, you know, to defensive purpose, if you see last night, James was driving to the cup every time. When LeBron got the ball, everybody sunk in. They didn't give him no lane.
At all.
But how you can't go out the best player in the league, the best scorer in the league, and you give him the lane the whole game? You can't win like that. That's losing defense.
But you know what? You know what? At this point in LeBron's career, I don't think on every possession he's going to be able to beat you off the dribble like James Harden.
Right.
I think LeBron's game now is made for the playoffs. 7-game series.
Game slow down.
Game slow down. You have rest in between. For him to try to do with James Harden, he can't do it at this point in his career. James right now gets it. Pity pat. I'm going every time. LeBron got to pick and choose his spots.
Well, let's don't also forget that LeBron James doesn't want to go to the free throw line as often as James Harden because he's not as effective.
Nah, does that
at
make
the free
any
throw
sense?
Line.
You're talking about the best player in the world don't want to go to the free throw line? That's crazy.
That's not what his strength. The
I
free
know,
throw
but
line.
But the fact that you're saying that is crazy. We talk
hey, Jack,
about one of the best players ever that don't want to go to the free throw line.
Jack, how many times when a technical foul happened, you
I'm
want
running
run to the
line,
free throw
I'm
line. You running to the free throw line, right?
Easy money. I'm adding that point.
I need
put
that point.
Scoreboard.
Yeah,
I'm adding those.
Right?
Yes.
You never ran from the free throw line. And I think that's one of the things that teams will look at, too, later on as we get into late in the season, but especially the playoffs with this particular Laker team. Mm. Okay. Can we take LeBron out by fouling him and forcing him? Now, he's shown that when he concentrates, he makes it. But if he misses early on, he has a tendency to peel back a little bit from being more aggressive going to the cup.
I think he was 2-for-6 last night.
Yeah.
Look, and I hate to circle back here. No one wants to talk about it. But Lonzo Ball's another liability at the free throw line. At some point, they got to make a decision on Lonzo. Does he work here or
but
not?
How are you going to play him? I mean, because his main duty is to handle the ball.
Mm.
With LeBron there, with Rondo there, he's never going to be able to be in a situation in a 48-minute game, 82 games a year, if he's healthy, to really develop into the point guard you want when you have those other guys there that take the ball out of his hand. I saw him do some good things. Mm-hmm. The real quick push-ups out to an outlet to Kuzma for a layup. They may not show up on the stat sheet, but that's his job. But if he can't do it consistently, how's he going to grow?
Well, two, He has to go out there and do it. I don't care how he feels or if LeBron got the ball or not.
So you know he's giving the ball up.
But what I'm saying, if you want to get established in this league and you want to keep yourself in the Lakers uniform while in this league, you have to go ahead and let your game flourish. You can't wait till LeBron give you an opportunity.
All right, Marcellus, it's time for my favorite segment, and I forgot my Twitter off, but
Twitter
I got
Twitter
it.
Off. You know you need it.
Hit time chat. To get antisocial. Got our social media manager, Darnell Smith.
Big Swole.
Help
big
us out.
Big Swole.
Big Swole. Flex
on. Darnell, what's popping on them Twitter streets?
Yeah, we're going to get it going with two GOATs in their own right, Gisele and Tom Brady. Forbes magazine reported that Gisele made $10 million in modeling in 2018, which pushes her career earnings to $488 million. Her husband, Tom Brady, meanwhile, has career on-field earnings of $230 million, meaning Gisele's income is more than double her husband's. Safe to say they're both doing all right. What did y'all think when I heard this?
She got a cousin. Jealous? I'm jealous. I wish my wife
that's
would.
That's a tough. Would you?
Hell yeah. I'm, you would yes, love that? I'm yes. almost about you to curse up that. Here. Yes, I want my wife to make more money than me. Man, heck yeah. I ain't got no problems with that at all. You don't get the power because you got the money. My wife still run the house and I got the money right now. So.
Hey, baby, happy birthday to you. Make sure you pay attention to this segment. We can try this role reverse at home.
For your birthday, she's like, you know what? I got a private jet for you. I'm going to send you to the island. You and your boys go golfing.
Oh.
Just have some fun.
Oh,
don't that sound good?
That sounds amazing.
Just make sure you don't wake me up out of that drink.
Hold for a second. I just want to rethink that. Because when you send your girl on a trip, what do you have planned?
He's inquired.
I'm going to smoke my cigar, have me some scotch and bourbon, and have some peace and quiet.
I'm just thinking, I can put child support on a woman. Wow.
And she can afford it, too,
just
right?
Just bring me back, y'all, because this is
massive. we've been out of that conversation. As soon as you make it to the league, it's like 0.00001% of people out
that's
there,
that's a
man.
Leprechaun right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I see you, Brady.
We lived in the moment, though.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, moving on to another Lakers legend. Shaq recently told USA Today Sports that his 2001 Lakers team would easily beat today's Golden State Warriors. Obviously, Twitter went crazy when this story came out with everyone giving their opinion on the matchup. Most people seemed to be on Shaq's side saying the Lakers would dominate, but one guy made a ridiculous statement saying Draymond would hold Shaq under 15 points in the game. So, fellas, who y'all got?
Who is dude?
That's why you don't pay attention to stuff like that. Yeah. That's why I would never have. I could easily say, Shaq, the year y'all was about to three-peat, we knocked y'all off. So if we can beat y'all, then we can beat the Warriors. Yeah. I wouldn't dare say that. I think the Warriors is one of the best teams ever. Shaq's team was good, too, but we'll never know. We'll never know.
Oh, I want to stay there for a minute. To me, it all depends on what game are we playing. This three-point game with the officiating we got now?
Right.
Are we playing back when Shaq could be Shaq? And
that's a good. That's,
and Kobe
yeah,
should be
that's,
Kobe.
Yeah, that's you know, a good
I
point,
talking, I was talking to Alonzo Moore, and I said, dog, if you came out of school now, you wouldn't be the same player because you would be a pick-and-pop guy running. Shaq wouldn't be as dominant because he would grow up playing the game different. So it's hard to say the 2001 team, when they played physical, lock up D, really didn't shoot the three like that compared to this Golden State team. Sounds good.
Man, let's stop. Let's not overthink this. It's simple math. Golden State would smoke them. The only rule.
No. Dude, it go by what rule?
How about this? The same court and the three-point line the same? Guess what? Who's guarding Clay?
Who's guarding Kobe?
Okay, I give you Kobe. Kobe and Steph neutralize each other.
Now no!
Are you crazy? That's crazy. Give me that.
What does that even mean?
Kobe shot 32% from the three. You think that's going to add up the same as the
stats? You don't have to shoot threes.
Oh, my God. You trying to act like Steph Curry ain't going to put bombs over that team?
No, Kobe going to lock Steph up. But Kobe, bro?
Okay, that's fine. He locked up Steph. Now, what you going to do with Clay? We going to throw at him. I'm waiting. Don't wait. Don't worry.
A lot of guys.
Anybody?
Rick Fox was a hell of a defender.
It's easier to take Clay out the game than it is Steph. It is. Because Steph handles the ball a lot more. So you can put somebody to kind of neutralize Clay.
I ain't even said Durant yet. Y'all want to keep talking?
No, but look. Perfect example.
You going to put Derek Fisher on him?
If you can play, the rules with Shaq and him can be physical, yes. But then the rules now, Shaq got to get out and guard the three-point line.
He got to be out there.
You can't do that. Back to Jason's point.
Yeah.
You know what rules you're talking about.
That's the best point you can make.
If you ship this Golden State team back then, I think Shaq and Kobe beat them.
Yeah.
If you move this team to now, I think it's close. I think Golden State wins, but I think it's close.
A two-headed monster versus a four-headed monster, and y'all saying
them is two of the biggest monsters ever.
Oh, I get it. I get it. All right, Shaq go for 40, and Kobe go for 40. All right, that's 80. Golden State, like, what else? Y'all got anything? Anybody else gonna shoot? Rick Fox will shoot.
If Kyrie and LeBron can beat them, you think Shaq and Kobe couldn't do it?
They had Durant, but
they beat him.
They beat him, but that ain't the same thing.
And LeBron almost, he won two games, but he didn't have anything. Remember that?
I'll give you some of that.
All right, we got to move on.
Move on.
Last but not least.
Hit him once.
Bring him the whole bottle. anyway, James Harrison, man, he was on TMZ Sports yesterday and compared himself to The Rock and Denzel. Take a listen.
Oh, my God.
I kind of see myself as an action type of, actor. More along the lines of, you might have heard him, some dude named Dwayne Johnson, but I feel like I got the range of somebody else you might have heard of, Denzel, you know? So, I kind of feel like that's a mix of what I am.
Can y'all see our guy James as the next big action star?
Man, look, as big as he is, as strong as whatever you want to do. Dude,
you got it.
Hey. I ain't messing with it.
Hey. If you want to be an actor, hey, do it, bro. I'm supporting you.
He got the persona.
Yeah, and the size.
And the attitude.
For sure. And he's authentic, so it wouldn't be like he's selling himself. It is him.
Right.
But The Rock is like 6'4". James is 5'11", 6'.
Yeah, he ain't blessed with that same GQ.
But you understand, Rock also was acting when he was in
The Rock is a
wrestling.
Character.
When he was wrestling, right. He was a character then, so that comes across, and it was easier for him to make that transition as an actor, because he was acting the whole time when he was wrestling.
James Harrison's a real person.
Yeah.
Rock is an actor, okay? This is a real person.
How about, like, more Michael Clark Duncan or something like that?
Green Mile.
Dead Man Walking, do that.
I can see James, though, moving into wrestling. If he wanted to go to the WWE route, build that character up, and then turn that character into a motion TV, action hero, I can see that.
He played Mr. T. That's
good.
The new Mr. T.
That's dope.
And Darnell could be his little brother.
we'll never lose. The Dunn brothers, the new Dunley brothers.
They work out together for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Steven. Coming up next on Lock It In, should... All right, welcome back to the show. It's time for the approval rating segment.
Okay.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about
gummies.
Gummies. It's legal
out here now. Our conversation on Phillip Rivers. Uncle Jimmy.
That's me.
Uncle Jimmy, what the hell are you wearing, by the way?
Yeah, who are you?
I'm Santa's little old helper.
I ain't trusting you with my gifts. You all right?
No, I'm not.
I'm Santa's little old helper.
Oh, okay. All right. Anyway, let's get to the highlights.
Oh! Damn it to hell. Let's get on to that. Let's do that. Let's start on that right now. I told y'all. What'd I tell you? He don't know a damn thing about football. Didn't I tell you?
You said
What else did I say yesterday? He gonna ruin the Kansas City Chiefs season. Didn't I say that?
You did.
Didn't I tell you that?
You said that.
Yes,
you
did.
I told you he gonna ruin the Kansas City season. And what did he say yesterday? What did he say?
Chargers ain't got no chance of winning whatsoever.
Get him.
Did you say that?
Get him.
Play that tape?
We're going to play the tape of our conversation about the MVP and Phillip Rivers earlier.
Foot facts.
For 25 years, I've been going to football and basketball games and decoding them, telling people exactly what to think after a contest. Dude. This is the first time in my know-it-all life that I don't know what to think after watching a game. What the hell happened last night?
No matter who's on your defense and what coverage you call, there's no defending the perfect pass. Don't put that on Bob Sutton. He's like, bro, he is as close as he can be without getting that flag, and still Phillip Rivers found that window. Beast.
All right, Uncle Jimmy. What's your take on our conversation about Phillip Rivers?
First of all, once again, Phillip Rivers is in a status you can't even begin to imagine. See, first of all, game recognized game. Mm. You understand what I'm saying? Game recognized game. Me and Phillip Rivers, we got a few things in common. Phillip got 8 or 9 kids. I got 15 step kids. Give or take a few more of my own, you know. we got it like that. One thing I'm gonna say about me and Phillip Rivers handle our business. This is what I'm saying. That's what we do. We handle our business. That's all, man.
What's your take on Phillip Rivers? Phillip Rivers only had one marriage. You had five.
look here, man. First of all, let me explain something to you. A man is only as loyal as his options.
Oh!
You take a man with a reputation like mine, ungodly good looks. You understand? How you gonna blame the women out here like that, man, when I step out on the streets? Man, it ain't even fair for me.
Oh, I'm blaming them.
This time of year?
I'm blaming them.
Hey, what's the season for giving? Who am I not to share my gifts?
What's your take on Phillip Rivers, man? We talking about who do you think Phillip Rivers should be the MVP?
Yeah.
First of all, man, let me say something. Any man that got 9 kids get my vote for most valuable player. You understand what I'm saying? Hell, in 2007, I voted for Antonio Camarade. Antonio Camarade. Hell, matter of fact, if it's up to me, he gonna be first ballot Hall of Fame.
Balanced it all. He balanced all that.
I mean, me and you get into the Hall of Fame before nephew over there.
Ain't no little Whitlocks. Darnell don't count. Come on, Whitlock, procreate.
Little Swole, procreate.
We gotta talk about Phillip Rivers and our approval rating. I don't have him quite at GOAT status.
Wow.
I have him at a total of 79.
Wow.
Job performance, a 22. All-time greatness, an 18. Character, 19. Authenticity, a 20. Almost a GOAT, but not quite a 79.
Damn. You don't have him at a great status? You got him like very goodness. Like,
I got him at an all-star level.
Pretty damn good. He molded very goodness.
Look, when all-star status equates to George Brett, that's who Phillip Rivers is George Brett.
I give you some of that. I give you some of that.
Damn
to
Antonio
me,
camaraderie, I tell you that.
I think I give him a little more credit off the field than you do. I'm being respectful. Job performance 23. If he were mobile, it'd be 25, but he takes some sacks sometimes just because he can't move them legs. All-time greatness, because of no ring and only one AFC championship game, they will hold it against him in terms of his greatness. But
you giving him a 12? He's not a Hall of Famer at a 12 all-time greatness. He can't make the
Does Dan Marino have a ring?
That's like he's memorable. Look, if Phillip Rivers flames out in the playoffs and never does anything, how much are we going to talk about Phillip Rivers going forward? You tell me.
Does Dan Marino have a ring?
No.
Was he pretty good?
He ain't Phillip Rivers.
Was he pretty good?
Dan Rivers. Dan Marino's better than Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, he better than
that. 24, does he have a ring?
I ain't talking to you right now. And I give him GOAT status still, though. I like the guy. I love the man. I love the
leader. How many GOATs are you going to have, man?
All GOATs.
Everybody's a GOAT.
Everybody.
I need you grading me. Hell, I would.
You're going to see the first non-GOAT.
Nah.
You got him right there, 79.
Nah.
On the cusp. If he does something in the postseason, he'll get that extra 2 or 3 points he needs to jump into GOAT status.
How you give Phillip Rivers a 19 in character? That's the perfect dude right now. Like, what has he done?
He talks a lot of smack on the field.
Oh,
good
point.
Good
point. All right, listen, we got to move on. Got a best and worst of Uncle Jimmy.
Somebody better check the damn brain cells of Jason Whitlock before he ruined another Kansas City season.
Welcome to Good Burger, homie. Good Burger, I take your burger.
You know me. You know I drive a caddy. You know, I get it straight off the showroom floor. That's just the way I roll. I got experience in dealing with high profile Stevens.
I look like Richard Sherman if I do like that.
How dare you compare thyself to the smartest man in football?